Well, this evening we're going to pick up, we're going to talk about sharing risk in quicksand.
Those are code words for insurance and debt. So that's our topics that we'll try and be covering tonight. Continue to remember that our series goal is to become successful Christian-centered stewards of God's resources in our lives, and thus representatives of our faith. Good representatives of our faith. We've seen this. We're out on the right-hand side. You know, again, it's always good to center ourselves back on the left-hand side, and that's where we spent our first 4 weeks, is really trying to establish a foundation to know that we're making financial decisions and choices in our lives, but hopefully we're using them from a biblical foundation standpoint of view. Again, one of the other key principles is starting from the premise that 100% of everything that we are blessed to have is God's, and we also have established the principle that He requires and asks us to give a tenth, a tithe, a tenth of what we have been blessed with. He's asked for us to give of His first fruits of what it is that we possess back to Him. We're on the right-hand side. Last week we talked about budgets. And I thought we would get a little farther than we did, past budgets, and we didn't. But it was a good topic. And one of the things that during this week that Wendy and I were, I don't know, it may have been Wednesday night that we were coming home. And how many of you have heard the Dave Ramsey Show? Okay. He actually is an individual. He's a Christian individual who has a TV or a radio show that talks about Christian finances and finances, and he's actually, you know, pretty good. A few times that I've listened to him talk, but someone was calling in was trying to talk about budgets and putting them together, and of course, if you think about budgets and even the one the forum that we had last week, there was a whole lot of different categories. And someone was trying to put together their budget, and they're saying, you know, I just can't figure out how to get something in every one of those buckets, you know, because you always feel like you got to have something budgeted in each one of them. And he kind of gave herself permission to kind of take a deep breath and stand back. And his comment was, you know, there's only one person that really has the ability to fill in every one of those blanks, and that's God. And so, you know, our lives are a series of choices. And as we, even within our finances, you know, that we're not going to be able to do everything that we may want or we may think that we need to do. And like anything in our life, we have to make choices and we have to make priorities. And so when we go through these lessons and we talk about some of these practical tools that I think are actually very, very good tools, you know, some of them might resonate where you feel you're at in your life and your family, of what's important to you, and through discussion with your spouse or your family, there are certain things you may say, you know, well, that's really not applicable to me. Or that's not an area or direction in our particular lives that we're concerned about. So again, as we go through this, there are no absolutes. But what's important is that, again, we start from the foundation that 100% of what is God's, and that we need to be good stewards of what He has blessed us with in our lives. What is insurance? Okay. Is it intended to make money? Is it an investment?
Somebody's going to make money.
Somebody's going to make money on it. Yeah, somebody's is trying to make money on it. You know, some people, when we talk about insurance, you know, they look back and say, well, you know, I didn't get back what I paid in. And, you know, that's probably a good thing. That means that your life probably hasn't had bumps and stumbles in it. And sometimes we want to say, oh, I got more out than what I put in insurance. And that's probably not necessarily a good thing. How would we define insurance? Shared risk. I think that's a component of what insurance really is. And what I mean by that is several people will pool their money together. So we would all pay so much a month for our car insurance, and everybody puts into the pool for a car insurance. Some, but not all, will need to take money out of that pot of money that was put in. It's a pretty simplistic approach to insurance, but that's really what the basic premise of it is. Together, we all share the risk of a major financial burden, and hopefully, we're not going to need that insurance. But again, the principle of insurance is a sound principle, and it's predicated on hedging, you know, putting a hope that we're not going to, but being prepared in case something catastrophic or something happens. There's different kinds of insurance, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on insurance tonight, but there's lots of it, and the goal and the intent from my perspective is to frame for you the different types of insurance that are out there and some pretty basic principles, again, which to measure and to look at insurance and what types do we need. And again, a lot of the types of insurance that we need is somewhat predicated maybe on our personal health issues or you know, the situations that our family may find ourselves in. And so, you know, health problems are probably one of the largest types of insurance that are available to us in our community. Some of us are fortunate and blessed to be able to have our employer to provide health insurance to us. There's an awful lot of folks in the state of Oregon and throughout the country. I think the last number I heard was between 34 and 40 million nationwide that don't have insurance, that their company is either they're unemployed or that they are their company is small that doesn't able to provide insurance. And so there's a full range of different health needs that are out there. All our health needs are the same. You know, who pays for those health issues that we have in our life through insurance varies from nobody to our employer, or we may choose to have an individual coverage ourselves, which is very expensive because there's not as much shared pooling of risk as we talked about. Disability insurance. What is disability insurance?
If I get disabled, it will cover my salary, and it's usually a percentage of it.
Right. Disability insurance, again, some employers provide it, and there's actually two types of disability insurance. I think that you have a short-term disability insurance, which typically will cover your salary, a portion of your salary, up to all of it, again, depending on the types of policies that you have, but typically short-term is up to a year covering your salary. And then long-term disability covers a percentage of your salary for a lifetime. And so, you know, for me, you know, I probably am more concerned about long-term disability than I am short-term disability. But again, it all depends on your situation and your family. So again, there's not a right or a wrong. You know, as in our household, I was more of the primary breadwinner, and so long-term disability, you know, would weigh more heavy on me than perhaps maybe, you know, in a family to where if Wendy had a health issue or something of that nature, probably there wouldn't be a short-term disability or a long-term disability. So, again, your situation and your family just may be different as you look at that. Questions or comments on that or health insurance? Long-term care insurance. Long-term care insurance is actually a fairly new type of insurance that's come into the marketplace in the last, 10 to 15 years. And maybe it's been longer, but that's mostly the period of time that I've been aware of it. And, you know, for me personally, the jury is out on the value of long-term insurance. But, again, that's a lot of these things become personal as you look at them. They're not, if you start paying them into long-term care insurance earlier in your life, as with a lot of things, the premiums are less and you're able to build upon them. If I came into the in long-term care insurance for me right now in Wendy, it would probably be fairly expensive. So you're weighing the risk of what those premiums are. But really, what it does, long-term care insurance will help you in Medicare only pays up to 100 days in a skilled nursing facility, for example. Long-term care insurance will pick up after that. It'll pick up for more home care and assisted living. There's different types of insurance or those types of parameters. What's really important, though, is that not all long-term care insurance policies are alike. And it's really important. We're going to talk about some of the things to be aware of when we have to consider the types of insurance that you may want to pursue. There's some things that we need to be aware of or make sure that we're reading that fine print. Anybody else have any comments or experiences on any of these up here? Another type of insurance is property insurance, auto insurance. In the state of Oregon, you have to have collision, is it?
Liability,
thanks. Liability insurance. Not all states have that you have to have liability insurance. In fact, it's only been in maybe the last 10 years that you've had to have liability insurance in Oregon, maybe longer. Anyway, I don't remember. But, you know, that's a non-negotiable. You have to have it if you're going to drive. But there's other choices. You know, we have choices of how much the deductible we want to have. And again, that really becomes a function of what's your financial, how much money do you feel that you have as you're putting your budget together. Sometimes having a high deductible is not a bad thing. It gives you more cash flow, and just like health insurance, your deductibles, if you're paying have a higher deductible, you're taking a little bit more risk. But from a cash flow standpoint of view, you may decide that really all you're trying to cover is that catastrophic event. Sometimes we get overinsured to where anything that happens, you know, that we want to make sure it's going to be paid for. And so we have a very little deductible, or in some cases people will say no deductible. And then it really becomes a question of how much cash do you have and how much risk are you wanting to take. And that's going to differ by family and by individual. Homeowners insurance is extremely important. And again, homeowners insurance to me, you know, through our experience, is one of those things you really want to read the fine print on. Because what you think sometimes is covered when an event happens, you know, that fine print will say, no, it's not really... You know, it's not really covered in it. That's right. Yeah. Natural disaster. Yeah.
Act of God.
Yeah.
That's pretty much required. You're not going to close a mortgage loan usually if you don't have insurance.
Well,
I don't know if it's a law.
That's an interesting question. You know, homeowners insurance. It is, with the exception sometimes of mortgage insurance. I think it's sometimes that if you have so much, if you put so much down on your home, and I think, you know, I want to say at one point it was 80%. If you had an 80% loan or less, you didn't have to take out mortgage insurance. I know,
right.
So.
Which is, but that's all the money, so, as opposed to the property.
Right. Oh, yeah. Good point.
So
good point.
I think now with homeowners insurance that if you don't have homeowners insurance or it does lapse, the bank will issue insurance.
Oh, is that right?
It's incredibly expensive.
Yeah. Same thing with a car. If you have a car loan and your insurance lapses, they will buy it for you. It's very expensive. I think both industries, they're protecting their interest.
Their interest, yes. They're protecting their investment.
And that's not a state law. That is that institution's requirement that, you know, when you read the fine print, I'm sure they would have that in there. So.
There are so many different types of insurance and so many different variations of each type of insurance, you know, your head can start swimming. And that's why I think these types of sharing of examples is really good.
Separate issue that FEMA, depending on floodplains and so on, may require, and that's on top of homeowners insurance. But then, as we saw in Katrina, they all start fighting with, is it flood, is it fire, is it wind, is it, you know, so it's fine print.
It's not real clear. I know that the house that we had before, the one we're in now, was actually in a floodplain by definition. I think it was a 100-year floodplain. And
but they wanted to
step
flood
So all types of things that when you buy a house, those types of things you don't even think about until all of a sudden you get to closing and you find out, oh. Renter's insurance. You know, this is probably the one that you know, at least when I was young, I wasn't quite as good at, and yet it can be one of the most powerful things, too, it can really cover if somebody comes in, and just like your homeowner's insurance, and it's important to do that. And if you're living with more than one individual, you still probably need to get your own policy to cover your possessions, because it's typically not going to be covered under the policy of whoever you're living with in a situation.
If somebody falls on your property, the insurance
covers that too. Yeah, excellent point. Right. You know, it's really kind of interesting too, because sometimes. And what you just said, if somebody is injured on your property, one of the other things, and again, depending on what your individual financial situation is, if you are blessed with a significant amount of resources and assets, there's some wisdom in having higher amounts on your homeowner's insurance for that fact, because if somebody knows that you have assets and you have money, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that they're going to fake something, and because they know you've, quote, got deep pockets
rich
and
people.
Rich people. Yep.
it's frivolous, but sometimes they lose those.
They lose, exactly, yeah. We see that in
large corporations just because of who you are. I know that you see it in PGE and we see it within Providence. It's sometimes, you know, you're two or three steps removed, but because they know that you had somehow or other may have touched whatever event that happened, you're going to be named in that lawsuit. And the amount of money to actually just even represent yourself and protect yourself and defend yourself can be extremely expensive.
Seems like our court systems, if there's any injury involved at all, there is some reward.
Yeah. You know, and again, that's one of those things that really comes at a lot of it sometimes is there's your state laws, and I know that there's a lot of, even the medical industry is one of the areas that I know that there's a lot of, there's one school of thought that says we need to cap, you know, the amount of liability that we would pay for medical, what's the term? Malpractice insurance, right. And you can make a case either side of that. And so it's one of those things, again, what your individual situation is. I'll tell you, there's certain types of physicians, if I was, you know, for example, if you are an OBGYN, if your malpractice insurance is through the roof by virtue of the type of practice that you have. Death is life insurance. We're going to talk a little bit more about life insurance in a minute too, because I think it's an important life insurance is important to reflect upon in your own family situation.
Life insurance. They always say, you know, we need to protect you. Wait a minute. Well, I'm dead. You're not protecting me. That's the term they use.
Yeah. We'll talk about that.
I love that. Yeah. From a high level, and you can help me out if you have some that you want to add to this. But again, depending on what your situation is and what type of risk are you willing to take as an individual or as a family, you may not need all the bells and whistles. This is where you come in and say, do I want a zero deductible, or am I willing to have a $1,500 deductible? I'm really a good driver, and it may depend on whether or not you feel that you have the capacity in some cases to be able to say, I have enough cash flow that I can do some savings that I can pay for whatever deductible if that is to come around and happen. If you don't have cash flow, then you're going to have to make those individual choices to say, what's the most cost effective and what's the best way for me to spend my dollars? Because if most of us, you know, have a limited amount to be able to spread around in our budgets. Cheaper isn't always better, though. You know, sometimes if you see a difference in car insurance and you call around or house insurance and it's 30 or 40% less than the other quotes that you got, you probably want to really be, you know, have your antenna up, you know, take a close look at that fine print and say what's really being covered. And in some cases, you also want to know what's it take for me to get out of it, the insurance. You know, am I signing up for life, or is it, you know, without a penalty? And sometimes there are penalties to be able to change your insurance. And I think one of the things about I've also heard people talk about, you know, that they've had insurance and they bought the one that was 30 or 40% less, and then the next time it came around, they bumped the rates 30, 40, 50%. So sometimes it's I'm going to get you in the showroom, and, you know, you hate to say it, but, you know, we probably all seen it and heard of it, and some of maybe even experienced that in our lives.
You know, maybe along this line, and it's my personal feeling, especially in the day of the internet. You can do all this, and you can sign up. And usually, it's young people asking me, you know, what about insurance? I can get it here, or whatever. And personally, I always tell them, I want an office I can go to. If I've got a problem, I can sit down until the problem is resolved. Rather than, we all know how the phone works and where it doesn't work.
Yeah, see, that's an excellent point. In fact,
growing up, I can remember my dad telling me, and I know that Wendy and I have practiced this, is that, you know, your insurance sometimes is only as good as the relationship that you have with your individual agent. And because, you know, a lot of it's about relationships and people feel comfortable with it. And if they know you, you know, sometimes everything isn't clearly black and white. Some of it's your character and how you have established a relationship and their willingness to be able to go to bat for you, because they've got tons of people calling you them every day saying, this is my need. So, yeah, excellent point.
Yeah, I noticed that insurance, that, you know, you get an agent that you like, and you, the insurance company knows that, you know, that you get somebody life. So when there's a catastrophe, they bring in adjusters from out of state. So you don't deal with your agent, you're dealing with their, you know, different adjusters, so you can't blame your agents.
Yeah, but I'm sure that insurance companies all have their, they sit in their meetings and they figure out, you know, their best strategies to maximize their returns.
Well, for them,
ethically.
For them, it is a business too, but they also know that legally they have a liability. So
absolutely.
Usually they're not going to go above and beyond what they have to.
Right.
But, you know, and as frustrating as that can be, there are reasons why insurance is important. You know, I mean, if we can't cover the loss of whatever, you know, you really should try to have insurance cover that. Some things we legally have to have insurance.
Yeah, some of it's not discretionary, but health insurance is one that can take you down real quick.
Right.
If you don't have health insurance and all of a sudden you have a catastrophic event, you know, a person all of a sudden, and I mean, and I've seen this happen, and we've all probably known people, that it doesn't take much to get $100,000 in bills, and you know, it can bury you real quick if you don't have that. Some organizations are good about working with you on a payback, but again, it'll turn your life upside down. And you, as you know, if your health is compromised, then it's very difficult for you to go back and earn a living wage too sometimes when you have a catastrophic event. So health insurance to me is one of the ones that, you know, for me, I place a very high priority on. Read the fine print. You've heard us talk about that a little bit. I think it's also sometimes important, you know, depending on the type of insurance and how much you're paying in premiums, how long has the company been around? And what's their financial underpinnings? And sometimes, you know, there's certain types of things that you don't want a startup company, somebody just coming in new. It's probably not worth that risk. Again, just a question to ask. Because, again, somebody will come in new and they'll undercut the market, but they don't have enough money to be able to cover the losses, too.
Right.
How well they pay out.
And a rating is that's an excellent point. They're all rated and getting that rating. Let's take a little bit closer look at life insurance. Ecclesiastes says, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor to the battle to the strong. Time and chance happeneth to all. For man knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them." You don't know. It's not a function. We've talked about this many, many times. Time and chance happens to all. And you may do even all the right things, but that person that decides to cross the center line when you're driving, we don't control those types of things. And this is when we start talking about life insurance, that I think that within your family, I think this is a really important discussion to be able to have. Why do we buy life insurance? Can you describe in just one word why we buy life insurance?
Love.
Love. That wasn't cued. But it is. When you stop and think about it, you know, Brother Jim was talking about, you know, buying life insurance. Well, you know, I'm not going to get any benefit out of life insurance that's on me.
Other than satisfaction.
Well, the confidence of knowing that you've done it. And again, that gets back to the love. You know, to me, it's about that love for your family. And by the way, it works both ways. It's not just, you know, the husband having life insurance on your wife. And again, what's the individual situation that you have in your own family? What's the needs? Why do we buy it? What would happen to your family if you died today? These are the types of questions that I think that we in our individual families, we need to have. You know, how I would answer that question, how Wendy and I would answer that question today is totally different than what it was when we first got married and when our kids were young. So that may change. Now, when we talk about life insurance, we're not going to talk about a lot because I really want to move into the next topic. But life insurance, you know, there's types. There's term insurance. And so, you know, it's probably the cheapest, and you can get it for 1 year, or sometimes you can go out several years and lock in a rate based on your age, but it'll go up. But if you find yourself in a situation to where your health changes, then being able to renew your life insurance, term insurance, becomes more difficult if you have a health event. So there's some terms I've heard, universal life, whole life. I mean, these are different terms, and there's little different permeations and subtleties to them. But that I know for me that we took a policy out not too long after we were married, and we paid on that. And that no matter what happens to my health, if I continue to keep those premiums up, I'm going to be able if my health goes bad, I'll still be able to pay the premiums that I locked into. And so those are the types of things that you want to think about when you start talking about life insurance. Would your spouse need to get a second job to make ends meet? The answer to that may be yes, and it may be just fine. But again, these are the types of questions that I would encourage you all to ask. And your life insurance may not be necessarily designed to cover them, your spouse not having to work for the rest of their life, but it may be to cover them for 2 or 3 years to be able to get things in order and to be able just to deal with a lot of things. When you lose a spouse, in addition to the emotional hole that you have in your heart, the time and energy it takes to figure out estates and solve all the financial affairs is horrendous. Would your children be able to go to college? And, I want to make a point here is that, I don't necessarily, I think a lot of people in our society have predetermined that, parents, it's an entitlement for their kids, for parents to be able to pay for their college. I don't necessarily agree with that. But it's a question that each individual family needs to ask, because it is a significant amount of money. And sometimes some families choose to say, that's what we want to do. We're blessed. We're in a position we can do that. And then it's a great thing. But it's these types of questions that I think that you need to continue to have in your family. Would your family be forced to move into a smaller home? The answer may be yes, and that may be perfectly fine. Could the family survive without your income? Why do we buy life insurance? These were some questions, but these are some of the outcomes. They're for final expenses. It can pay for these final expenses. Very expensive. A mortgage. If you don't have mortgage insurance, it can be a real gift to have your mortgage paid off. It eliminates that question, do I have to move to a smaller house?
Or get a second job.
Exactly. Other debt. You may have your credit cards, your auto insurance. This is where you start asking yourself, though, when your wife, my kids and Wendy, for one of my birthdays, I can't remember which one, it was the 40th, that they bought me my birthday present was to be able to jump out of an airplane. I'd always wanted to do that, but I always wanted, my first question then, did you take an insurance policy out of them? So I want to know what their motive was,
Yeah, some of us are worth more.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to say it that way, but that's it, yeah. Church and charity. We usually don't think about this, but when you think about, in a smaller congregation, God's going to provide. But I certainly don't think it's an inappropriate question to ask yourself, would you want to use and tithe off of your insurance? Because your church family, they're going to be hurt by that loss too, and it has its impact. So, college expenses, we've talked about that. Loss of income, we've talked about that too. But life insurance is important. It's an important discussion to have. But the reason to do it is love. Last point there, I forgot, was estate taxes. Each state is different, and these laws are always changing. But boy, I'll tell you, they can be exorbitant.
Any way they can.
Right. We'll be talking more about, planning for retirement and actually passing it on, because I think there's a lot of other things that whether it's trust and those types of things downstream, I think are important conversations to have within your family too. Anybody have anything else to say on insurance? Okay, I knew this was going to get crunched between these two. Debt. What is debt? It's what?
Evil.
Evil. Debt is merely borrowing money with the expectation of repayment. Quicksand, be prepared. Debt is like quicksand. It's easy to get into, but very difficult to get out of. The thing I like about this, I don't know who this is, it almost looks like a Far Side, but you can see, you know, you've got the scout leader, it looks like, heading into this deep sand, and you've got people right behind him following in. And what is amazing to me about that is that's kind of how we are. We kind of follow sometimes the example that's set for us, and it's real easy to get tripped into this. And it underscores to me, you know, that when we talk about being Christians and how do we model our behavior, how other people are looking at us, how we manage our finances is a statement of, again, where we value in our lives. Is it wrong for Christians to use debt? Misspelling. How many of you say it's wrong? No. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Proverbs. Now, some people will use this verse to tell you that you shouldn't have debt. But I think this is a true statement. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. And if you get into debt, if we get into debt, you know, that's who we're beholden to. And they control and influence what we do. And we kind of look at it, we think about the loan shark. I mean, that's the extreme case, but you see it on TV periodically when somebody gets really into debt over their head, and then ethically they cross the line because they're in fear of not being able to pay it back, that's an exaggeration, but that's a reality that happens in the world.
Or not, because if you think about it, people get so far in debt that they have to take a second job, and then they're out of church.
Right.
They can't work. They have to work on Sunday. They don't have a choice in their life what they can do.
And Brother Jim, that's an excellent point, and I want to cover that a little bit more in the lesson, because it's a point that we don't want to lose sight of, because our spiritual life is compromised by debt. Absolutely. If thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as a user, neither shalt thou lay any upon him usury. This would tell me that God acknowledges, when he says his people, if they have a need to have money, that he's saying actually to his people, he said, you know, loan it to them if they need it. He's also telling them not to do, to charge them an exorbitant amount of money. In fact, if you really look at it, he was actually saying, don't charge them anything. You know, we had an obligation, the individual has an obligation to pay him back. It's fascinating if you go back and look at Jewish law, and we don't have time to talk about it. This was a huge issue with the children of Israel, and actually in the time of Christ, and how people actually even view Israel and Jews today. Around this particular topic. Fascinating things in their books and their law books about this. Debt is the national epidemic. Systemic desensitization. That's what I mean by that. I like this example. There's two examples I'm going to give you that I think really kind of frame it. How many of you are afraid of spiders? Okay, I've seen television shows, I don't know how many of you sometimes have seen them, but people are so deathly afraid of spiders that they won't even get in the same room. I mean, if they know there's a spider there, they just move away. But they have such a fear of them that they actually, you know, want to get over their fear of spiders. And they actually, there's people that will take them and they'll go in for, you know, therapy or whatever, and you get they'll work you up to get close to even get in the vicinity of a spider, up to the point to where you can get comfortable enough where you can actually touch a spider. Okay, so they try and they slowly remove that fear that you have by getting you closer and making you more comfortable with the spider in your room, and up to the point to where you're comfortable enough to where you can hold that spider and go, yeah, I did it. Well, that's kind of how our society has gotten. We've been desensitized to debt. If you go back 30, 40, 50 years ago and talk to our parents in some cases, you know, debt was not a good word. It was not a good word.
They actually saved up their money to buy a car.
Right.
And in fact, mortgages didn't come about till post-World War II. People either rented or was wealthy because they didn't. And now I've heard they have 50-year mortgages, so they've shot that beyond 30-year.
And then about that.
You'll never,
Debt provides, in some cases, instant gratification. I see it, I want it, I got it. This shows marshmallows. And there was a fascinating study that was done back in 1960 that it was four-year-olds. And an individual came into the room and he said, he put marshmallows out. And he said, you know, I've got a marshmallow for each one of you. He says, but if you guys will wait, he says, and I'm going to walk out, I've got something to do real quick. If you can wait, he says, I'll come back and I'll give you two marshmallows, if you'll just wait till I get back. He left the room, came back about 2 minutes later, and two-thirds of the four-year-olds had eaten that one. Only a third of them, you know, waited and had the two. Now, what's fascinating about this is they actually followed these individuals through their lives. And again, there is no, you know, these are generalizations, these are studies, and you always hear them. But the fascinating thing that they said, that those individuals, that third of the individuals who chose to wait until they came back, when they looked at their lives across the span of time, they found that they were more positive individuals, had a better frame of mind, they were more self-motivated, they were more persistent in difficult times, they had more successful marriages, they had higher incomes, they had better health, and in general they were just more satisfied and happy individuals.
All because of a marshmallow.
All because of a marshmallow.
Two marshmallows.
Two marshmallows, yeah. But what it really underscores is that self-discipline, because that gratification is, I want it right now. But if you have the courage to be able to look on the horizon and you plan towards something, there's much more value. And how many times have you actually, you know, said to your kids, and it's the same principle to us, if they work for it, they're going to value it. But if you just give it to them, they're not going to have the same importance and the value to it. And it's so true. It's true for us. We third party it by talking about other people, but it's the same way with us. If you've had to really work for something, really said that there's something, a goal out there, and I'm going to wait for it, when you get it, you really value it. Alarming trends. Approximately half of all credit card holders pay only their monthly minimum. Half of all credit card holders pay only their minimum monthly requirement. Which, by the way, as I understand, you know, I've never looked at my credit card to know. Now, you can either say, he's struggling, which may be the case. But I understand that the minimum, in some cases, or it's not 2%, 2.5%, something like that. I don't know. In 2003, the average credit card debt of U.S. households with at least one card was $9,205, up from $2,966 in 1990. It's a 310% increase. Inflation was not that much. Okay. There's millions of statistics out there, and for every one of these, somebody else has got another one. The average American household is solicited 7 times a year by credit card companies. Imagine. More than that. Okay. All right. What credibility do I have now? None whatsoever.
That's more like a week.
Yeah. The percent of U.S. households deemed creditworthy by lending industry is 78%.
They have some low standards.
The number of credit card holders who declared bankruptcy last year was 1.5 million. That was a 2003 or 4 number, I think. There are two kinds of debt. There's good debt. Now, again, this is a matter of perspective. Okay. Good debt, mortgage, education, business. If you look at those from the standpoint of view that each one of those has the potential of having some payback. You talked about a vehicle. Technology, getting that new computer, that new TV, that new remote control that Wendy talked about last night.
Two.
Now, I'm only admitting to two. But I'm at least acknowledging my problem, and I think I know what the 12-step process is for me. Clothing, food, and jewelry. You know, in general, if what you purchase on credit increases in value, it's good. Could be. It could be. It could be. And again, if we're talking generalizations, and you cannot, quote, take this to the bank. You can make bad decisions in situations that could increase. So I really want to underscore this. But at a minimum, that threshold of saying, if it has the potential to increase in value, then maybe you want to spend a little bit of time thinking about that. Is it really going to do that? And talk about it. But if it's going to lose money right from the time it walks out, then really give pause.
This made me think of how kids are hit with weddings and jewelers. They really push for a huge amount of money into a ring. And that's not necessarily going up in value or not, but I mean, it's just, you know, you're bombarded in many ways.
Well, it's something you're going to keep too. You know, we say it's going to increase in value, but the you're not increasing it in the value so that you can make money on it, which is a different type of value.
Besides that, Valentine's Day is coming up.
Exactly. And that's what I mean. In general, you can look at good debt, but you could ask the question. So again, I really want to underscore, and a couple of you pointed this out. You know, just say because good and bad, you don't run out and do it. But I'm just saying, in general, you can make a case for these over here, but you can get overextended in these to where it really becomes a problem. Consequences of debt. Stress. I'm going to go through these real quick. And if someone we want to pick up next week, we can. Stress. The number one, some people will tell you the number one cause of divorce is financial problems. Now, there's other studies and there's other things that are up there, but some studies will tell you that.
Always in the top three.
Any
study you see, it's always in the top three of marital problems.
Failure to meet future goals. I think when you stop and think about it, if you're living for just to pay for what you've got right now, how are you going to be able to plan for retirement? If you're choosing to want to look to try and position your kids so that you can help them in college, you know, you're making choices today that if you're not looking out future, then you're just living in the moment. And that's not healthy, I don't think. Restriction, and this was talked about, Brother Jim talked about restriction of your spiritual growth. And I think there's a couple points here. One, we lose our spiritual focus. What's important? So if you're living things, first of all, what's it saying to people around you? Because typically when you're in over your head with debt, people see it. They can see the toll that it's beginning to take on your life. And sometimes you don't even have to say it. What's important in your life? Where your treasure is, where your heart is where your treasure is. It's biblical. Removes us of the ability to help others in times of need. As it is written, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. There's many scriptures that talk about this. But I think God would have us and wants us, you know, to see the need. And if we are so burdened down with our own debt and our own trying to make ends meet, because of the choices we've overextended ourselves, sometimes we're not even going to see the need of others, much less be in a position to be able to help them. And I don't think that God would have us to do that. Benefits of cash. Cash, I think, is really important. And if you can put together a budget and be in a position to where you can live with cash alone, it's going to give you a lot less stress. You're going to feel more like giving. Not only tithing, but also when you see a need. You're going to make smarter purchases. We talked about this. If you have to really save for something, and it's going to take you a year or 6 months or 2 years to be able to save up, you're going to, one, make sure you really want it or need it. But usually it's a want. It's going to give a better testimony to your kids and those that are around you when they see that level of discipline. And I think it's a great witness. And I think it's biblical. Is it possible to pay cash for a vehicle? Yeah. This is probably the tough one. Again, you have that dilemma of saying, you know, if my car, I'm always having to have it fixed because it's breaking down. That's another. You know, some people, you know, I marvel at Nate. He's got a skill that he can fix a car, and you know, he's telling me he got a car that he was given to him. He says for $250, he thinks he can get it running and rebuild the engine. I couldn't even hope to do that. In my wildest dreams, I don't have that skill. But he would make different choices about a vehicle than I would. I couldn't make those same choices because I don't have that skill to be able to do that. So, you know, it's really important as you weigh this back and forth. But if cash flow is a real issue, living for a car payment can be a challenge.
I believe that you pay half for that vehicle if you pay cash for it because of the interest. High interest on the vehicles.
Right.
So by the time.
Absolutely. And again, that's where each situation is different depending on what your cash flow is. If you're going to have a car that's used, depending on how used it is and where it's at, you probably should be putting that budget together to put something away in the event that something happens to that car so that all of a sudden you say, oh, now I got that's not good debt, but I'm going to have to go ahead and go into debt for it. It's those types of thinkings and trying to be proactive in thinking of where your cash is going to go and what types of unfortunate things may present themselves. This is this and one more, and we're done. This is real-life example credit card. If you have a credit card and a 15% interest on it, which is not uncommon, amount owed is $1,000, and you're paying a minimum of 2%. If that's the minimum payment. Remember, how many people was it? Was it a third of the people only paying the minimum, or was it more than that?
78%.
No, that was 78% were the people that were credit worthy.
Half, or merely meaning the
minimum payment. It would take you 14 years to pay that off. You'd pay $2,096, and you would pay $1,096 in interest. Everybody see how that works?
You're paying $96.
$1,096.
More than your principal.
You're paying $1,000 back.
You bought it twice.
Right. You bought it twice. Plus you haven't been able to do anything. Probably whatever it was you bought, if you only paid it off at 2%, probably, you know, you threw it away. You might have not even been using it 6 months or 6 weeks from the time that you did it. But if you're only paying that minimum payment. I mean, it's really easy to see how people can get extended.
If you're paying on a vehicle and then it breaks down, you've got to get it fixed because you owe.
Right.
You can't walk
right.
away from it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. If it was 25% on that $1,000, it'd cost you $5,100. That's a difference of 10% in interest. If you had a $5,000 loan, it would take you 31 years to pay it off, and you would pay $7,541. $5,000 on a 25%, 2.3% return. Oh, didn't get the bonus one here yet. 86 years, it would cost you $36,000 on that $5,000 loan. And if you had a 29% interest on a $30,000 owed, some people have that, by the way. It's not beyond the realm of possibility there's people out there with credit card debt like that. Look at this. Take you 63 years and cost you $139,000 when it was all said and done. finances are 80% behavior and 20% knowledge. Think about that. Anybody have any last questions?
Our society, and is of interest to me because I've seen it firsthand, is that our elderly are sometimes caught up in this because they don't, the insurance companies and credit card companies and all of those things, they don't have a full understanding. And I have seen so many who end up just at the end of good lives in a mess because they don't understand what's going on.
You know, and not only that, and we're going to talk about it, you know, because we're going to talk about, you know, cash reserves and how much is enough and what's hoarding and versus not. We're going to talk about retirement. But, you know, sometimes we even have parents that because, you know, they feel so obligated to their kids that they put themselves financially at risk. And that's not right. That's not right. And so those are types of things that we need to be talking about, you know, in coming weeks. Any other comments or questions? Thanks, everybody. I'm sorry we went about 7 minutes over. Tried to cover two, and I'm trying to keep these forward. And if I'm cutting things off, let me know, and we can take one topic at a time, and we can have more discussion on them, too. Can everybody stand?